CPA Mobile.
This is CPA, this is KF4GGK, Gary.
Morning Gary, name is David, and what are you up to this morning?
I'm sitting here in my motorhome, I'm contemplating my work I have to do to finish my hookup with all my ham gear. And what about you?
Sounds like a lot of fun, especially compared to what I'm doing. I'm chasing a leak, a water leak. Evidently, I've got one right where they tied the irrigation system into my main water pipe coming in. It's right, the box is right beyond the the water meter, and so I dug that area up, and sure enough, it started filling up with water. So that's where the water people told me my leak was, and how they knew that, I don't know. But so I got to turn my water off. I got me a pump, and I'm gonna take it home and turn the water off and pump that water out so I can find that leak.
That's a major project. Yeah, I don't envy you at all. Is that pipe, by any chance, that white PVC?
PVC pipe, and I've never messed with this before, but I understand you can just put some glue on it and push your joints together. I'm kind of tempted just to cap it off because I accidentally cut the wire going to the control box. I can't use the stupid thing anyway, so I might as well just cap it off if I can. It just depends on which method will be easier.
The way the weather is, capping off may be easier, and get to it in the spring when it's warmer. White PVC is problematic over a long time. It tends to get brittle and crack. So I'm not sure if you ever have a chance to replace it, but it may happen again. Over.
Good news. I remember driving up to my parents' house. This used to be their house, and they had the whole yard dug up, had the trenches dug, and they buried this eight inches deep, so it's plenty deep not to freeze. And but they had that whole yard dug up, and there wasn't a speck of grass anywhere. And they put in the irrigation system, and then he had Bermuda sod put down after that. So the yard looks real good.
Sounds like another good project. I'm here in the county, Pickens County, next to Lake Hartwell. And there's a water company that serves us, and they had to replace their PVC lines 2 years ago because here and there they started cracking. So I'm not sure what a good substitute is, but what you're experiencing is fairly common. Over.
I'm calling here. Let me get this. My wife, KB4CBA. KB4CBA.
Do you have to go in the mountains to get this fixed, or is at here in the lowland.
Yeah, I didn't get much of that. Your signal's real noisy. Did you change the locations or something?
The same all the time. Unfortunately, the repeater may not reach you that well. How did this conversation go?
Better. It started off a little scratchy, but you got better as you were talking. It was almost like you were on a handheld or something, just walking around or something.
A fixed base, and let's see, 146.010, or let's see, what, maybe I'm off frequency, let me double check.
DJC.
Go ahead.
Okay. Sounds good on this end. That last transmission said it had a little bit of white noise, but it was okay to me. How about you, Dave?
Transmission was good to me. He's got a little bit of noise, but he's 100% readable.
It's just that when you're driving, sometimes there's some interference. Now, there's another repeater that is up on... Sassafras Mountain. Do you know about that one?
A frequency.
And I think
6.790, and there's no tone.
I probably can hit this one better. I don't usually have a problem with hitting this repeater. Full quieting. Just depends on. There's a couple of places that I go mobile that I get a little noisy, but I'm getting ready to pull in the garage here, so I'm going to have to bail out on you and jump on this water leak. So my wife just called me and asked me if she could wash some clothes. I said, I'm getting ready to turn the water off, so I said, if you want some water, you better get you a pot and fill it up, because I'm getting ready to turn it off.
Dave.
Yeah, Dave, put your boots on, and I hope it works well for you. Lots of luck. Gary here at KF4GGK.
That's 73 to both of you, Jerry and Gary. This is kind of new ground for me. I'm not a plumber really. Although I've done some plumbing work, and this is one of those that I'm gonna attempt, and if I get, in a spot, then I'll call somebody. But anyway, y'all have a good one. 73 is KB4CBA mobile clear.
Catch all your call. Was it KF4CCK or C? I missed the last. I got the C in the K, but I didn't know the letter between it. N4DJC.
The DJC, this is Kilo Foxtrot 4, Golf Kilo, KF4 is GGK, and the name is Gary.
How poorly I hear. I had CCK, but it's GGK. Okay, well, if you're in Pickens, Kansas, I'm right on the interstate, right near exit 19 in Anderson. And I can get into the 79 machine, but it's a little, I don't know if it's just, I'm down on the lakes. I'm barely above sea level, 600 feet above sea level, so I don't have I've got an antenna inside the upper bedroom that I run a Ringo Ranger. But I can get into that machine pretty well. That's the Anderson Radio Club repeater. And it's got a good signal. It just depends on what lobe you're on. Some lobes are better than others, I think.
Absolutely right. It is kind of finicky because we live between hills and mountains and all that. I'm also here in what could be considered a hole. I'm off of the 12-mile river, just where the Army Corps of Engineers has a recreational area across the lake from the road. But I'm still having trouble with some of the other repeaters, like the one that's in Pickens, believe it or not, even though it's close. Back to you.
I don't have my phone or iPad with me. I could tell you exactly where those repeaters are located, but the one I had pretty good luck with when I traveled up in Walhalla in that area was that 700 repeater. I think it's got a tone on it, though. And I'm not sure if it's called a Pickens repeater or not. I don't recall which one it was, but there's another one up there, Gary, that's linked in with the 9-7 and the 5-4-7 link repeaters. You know, one of them is on Caesar's Head, and the other one is here in Anderson on top of AMED Hospital. And those repeaters are linked all the time. There's several of them, but I think there's one up somewhere up in that area. I want to say it's a 2-9 machine, but I don't recall exactly which one it was now. But that one, you might be able to get into that one. If that's the case, that's a link repeater, and you'll be hitting all up and down. You know, basically covers a lot of the state of South Carolina.
That's interesting. Yeah, I see the 145.290 on my sheet. It's got a tone of 162.2. It's in Seneca on Long Mountain. The other one you mentioned, the 146.700, that's got a tone of 107.2. And that's in Pickens and belongs to the Foothill Amateur Radio Club. Yeah, that's what I can't get to. But then again, I am mobile. I am sitting in my motorhome. And I have a antenna that's only about 8 inches tall. It's sort of a strange little item. It looks like an oversized 606, a metal tube. So that's where I'm at. Back to you.
I know, of course, my father-in-law passed away several years ago, but he did a lot of traveling, RV traveling over the years, and I always carried a handheld with me, but a lot of times I just take a quarter-wave mag mounts and stick it on there with a handheld and use it. But I've got a setup now, which would be easy for somebody to travel. I've just got I've got dual band capability, but I don't do a lot outside of 2 meters right now on FM. But I've got a Ringer Ranger, and mine's just sitting on a tripod, or not a tripod, but just a little stand I made out of PVC tubing. It just fits right on it, and you can take it apart and take it down and stow it away. I mean, the antenna's only like 37 or 38 inches long. And since you don't have to have a ground plane with it, you know, it's basically like an in-fed dipole, I guess is what a Ringo is. But it's pretty compact, and that'd be something you could set it up outside the RV if you want to do without having to attach it to it. And since it doesn't need to be attached to metal, you could take it up, take it down. But it's pretty compact. I mean, I got it in a upstairs bedroom, and it does pretty well. I'm running about 20 watts right now into the machine, and I'm probably 30 miles from the repeater right now.
Ringo Ranger is a very good antenna. It's been around for a long time, and it really doesn't need a ground plane. I'm not sure if it has some short radials on the bottom, but that's a good unit. That's good. Yeah, mine is called a compact antenna. That's the name, compactantenna.com. It's one of those magic units that fits inside of a tube that's about 8 inches tall and about an inch and a half diameter. The nice thing about it, it doesn't really require a ground plane. And I have it mounted on top of my ladder in the back of the motorhome with a tilt-away joint. I lost about a half a dozen antennas on the RV from branches, tree branches. So I think this one here will survive for a while. It covers 2 meters, 1.25 meters, and 70 centimeters. Back to you.
For those, I think I've seen one. It kind of reminds me of the ones where you, I know you've been a ham long enough to, or I know you realize that, you know, they've, I've seen some where people use these unused paint cans and just put a connector in that and use the can as a ground plane. We used to do years ago when I first got involved. I've been a ham for 41 years now, so when I first got involved in I-Fed mag mounts, and I just sit it on like a steel pizza tin, 16-inch pizza tin. They give me a decent ground plane. I did a lot of stuff, you know, one of those when I wasn't in a car. But yeah, the Ringo doesn't have a radio. It doesn't have any radios out like the Comets or some of the other ones do. It's just it's got the little ring at the bottom. It's basically like a bow, and it's basically a tuning ring is what it amounts to. But I had a lot of success out of the Larson mag mounts when you halfway ones that they made, and you know that you could just, you know, you cut the antenna to tune it and use we used to use bird watt meters to tune ours with, and you just take a pair of nippers and nip the end of, you know, nip the base of the actual antenna and just sit it in and get it tuned up. And those things worked really well back in the early 80s, I know.
That's still done. I have a 5/8 mag mount on top of my car. And you're right. That's what used to do. Used to nip them and tune them. Now they supply leeway. You can move them in and out of a fixture and then use the set screw to hold it where you want it. Yeah, it's a great hobby. It's a great hobby. I'm a member of the Pickens County Communications Group, and it's sort of a fun outfit. We help the emergency people, but they rely exclusively on handhelds to communicate, so that's why I have this capability of 2 meters, 1.25, and 70 centimeters. And we have a net on 8 o'clock every Tuesday, and I'm trying to think of the frequency. It's a 440 frequency. Here's the, let's see. Nope, can't see it right away. Sorry. There's so many repeaters here I'm looking at, I get confused. Back to you.
I got 440 capability. I actually have a small beam, like a handheld beam. Actually, it's the same thing I use for satellite work on 440. I can use it, but I'm so far down the hole where I just don't have the propagation is not great on 440 for me. I can get into the Anderson machine, but again, it's linked to the 9.7. They've got a 440 machine and a 2 meter machine that are linked together, in addition to all the other ones in that system. And there's a couple of 220 repeaters up. You know, a lot of the guys in the mountain, you know, like those 220 repeaters, but I haven't had a 220 radio in years. But I did it one time. I lived in Rock Hill for a long time, and we had a few 220 machines up in North Carolina that when I traveled some, I'd use those. And they seem to be real popular with some guys, especially up in your part of the state.
No repeaters around. Some years ago, I bought a unit for APRS. That's automatic position system that every so often finds the repeater and sends out the GPS coordinates, and that gets coordinated by some magical computer, and then somebody at home can see where the motorhome is when we're driving. It's kind of cool, except if you go into places where there are hardly any repeaters, then people think you're lost. Of course, I'm not lost. You know, I got my GPS here in the motorhome. Yeah, it's kind of fun, this amateur radio stuff. These repeaters, they are all over the country, and it's kind of fun to work with them. Back to you.
I'm running APRS in the background on this rig now. This is a Geopan Jaeger. I picked up a week or so ago, and I can run 2 or 440 on it, and then I can run on the other band. I can run APRS. That's what I'm doing right now. I do it just for fun, but I also use it for the contact with the International Space Station. With that, you know, they have an APRS digipeter on board that. I use it for that occasionally when it's on. It's turned up. It may not be on right now. They've got a new crossband repeater set up on it. They just got up and running a few weeks ago. They turned it, probably a month ago, I guess, now. But they've got it. It's supposed to come back on around December the 4th or 5th, I think, and it's going to be a melee. Everybody tries to get in, but it's a crossband. It's got 2 meters up, 440 down. I mean, a 430 down. I think it's 437. I can't remember the exact frequency, but it's a crossband. And they got 5 new hams up there with that recent Dragon launch, SpaceX launch. So there may even be some on the regular voice frequencies, but the digipeter up there is always real popular. But it's kind of like the APRS stuff, Gary. A lot of the stations are unmanned now, so if you send a message, you may or may not get a response. But, you know, there's a guy down here not too far from it. He runs an iGate, so I can get digipeted out of it on APRS, you know, terrestrial APRS pretty easily. And there's actually another one up on the same location where this repeater is. I think it's in for it's either DVE or VDE, one or the other. And I don't know who operates that, but I'm not sure if it's active right now or not. But that was a little difficult for me to get into sometimes on APRS. But like I said, I do run it. I usually run it in the background when I'm here at home.
Something is kicking the repeater on and off. Looks like we're back to normal. Yeah, we visited 72 different national parks all over the USA, and the APRS kept our daughter, who is at home, informed where we were. So that worked out good. That was for Parks on the Air. Did you participate in that project?
Familiar with it. I don't do any traveling anymore. We're staying pretty close to the house now. We still have family here in the area, but we haven't done much traveling. My wife's parents both passed away within a year of each other a couple of years ago. We've been busy with handling all that. They were both in pretty bad shape, so we did a lot of care for them. But when this thing eases up a little bit, we may get out and do some more traveling. No, but I am familiar with it. I follow the, you know, sometimes these balloon launches. I follow those sometimes. And APRS is pretty handy. The first time I had any exposure to it, had an opportunity to go to the Dayton Ham Fest back in '96, I think. And the guy that one of the guys had his own plane, so we flew up there in the plane. And the other guy was one of the early APRS adopters, and we had the APRS on board the plane, and the guys, and they were tracking us at Dayton as we were flying, and another guy was down on the ground tracking us as well. But this was well before they had all the eye gates like they have now. But it's a lot of fun, though.
That is. Pox on the Air did not require traveling because there were two parts to it. One were the chasers, which were usually at home, and the others were the activators. Those were the people on the road. So we were an activator. My wife Margie, KK4AGN, Margie, she usually was on the air. And she made over 4,500 contacts that year with Pox on the Air. Was quite an event. I sat next to her and helped her with the logging. And then, of course, it got sent into the ARRL over her cell phone hotspot. Yeah, it was quite a setup. We had a good time. I wish they would bring it back to you.
That was 4,000 contacts. That's a lot of contacts. But it really sounds like a lot of fun. I used to enjoy contests and field day contests when I was a lot more active. But I don't do that anymore. I've been lazy and not willing to get to do the work to do it anymore. Well, Gary, I got to run. I got to head over to Greenville here in just a few minutes to my daughter's house to deliver a couple of things to them and head back in. But like I said, I'll have a radio in the car with me. I'll be listening out for you later this afternoon if you get back on the air again. If you hear me, just give me a shout. KF4GGK, N4DJC, I'll be clear after your final, Gary.
You're a fun guy to talk to. I hope you're safe on the road. 73, Gary at KF4GGK.
Ford GGK, this is N0TR, Norway, 0 Tango Radio. My name's Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How's the world treating you today, huh?
Beautiful. It's 58 degrees here in Greer, and 35% humidity, and you can't beat it. And I think Jerry called you Gary. I see it's Gerhard, but I've really enjoyed listening to you and your biography on QRZ. It's wonderful. I just wonder who that ugly guy was sticking his head outside of that steam engine, though.
Yeah, that's me. That's one of the pictures from Pox on the Air in Pennsylvania. It's a place called Steamtown. It's a national park, and they got real locomotives. And they even had one cut in half, painted different colors. So for the first time in my life, I was able to figure out how a steam locomotive really worked. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, my wife, she ended up with a trigger thumb. It took about 6 months to heal. Now she has a headset and a foot switch, so she won't get a trigger thumb anymore. Back to you.
Just want to jump in and say hello to Tom. Tom, hope you're doing, you and Bernice are doing well today.
And you too, back right at you in 73. You have a good day. Enjoyed listening to you guys. Gerhard, did you say you go by Jerry? I don't want to goof that up.
Either one. Since I'm an immigrant, I always made a conscious effort to American. Gary, but either one is fine. Go ahead.
Oh, fine business. And Gary, it's easier to pronounce. Both my daughter and my granddaughter speak fluent German, and they used to go back to Germany every other year up until this COVID hit. Shelly was a music major at the University of Michigan. And after she graduated, she went to Vienna, Austria, and studied there at the Hochschule for Music. come back and taught 4 years, and then went back over there to Frankfurt as your husband did a job there. Got another degree in Frankfurt at the Hochschule for Music, and we had the opportunity to visit them many years ago over there, and it's quite beautiful, both countries, Austria and Germany.
It's very nice. My wife always asked me where I came from, and I told her my mother, but that wasn't enough. So 6 years ago, I had to take her over to Germany. We rented a small motorhome and made a big circle through Germany. And I told her beforehand that I had no deep desire to go back. And I forewarned her that all you're going to see is lots of people, and old buildings. There's nothing like the USA. You know, they don't have the Grand Canyon. You know, they don't have natural wonders that we have here. South Dakota. Incredible stuff in the USA. But she...
The repeater dropped out on you. I don't know if it's chopped straight down or what, but so far you've had a great signal. And I was looking at your motorhome installation of your 500-watt rig. It's just impeccable. But after reading that biography, I can understand why. Over.
I'm a big asset in Germany, but it was too heavy to bring through the U.S. So I had to trade it in, and I traded it in for some electronic parts. So back in 54, I got started with the second issue of Popular Electronics. And then I bought that thing on CK722 transistors. And I knew transistors before I ever knew vacuum tubes. And off I went. It's been a great run. Paid off. I've been able to make a living with electronics. And I am so happy now because I graduated from working.
Yeah, they say that working's a four-letter word, W-O-R-K. Well, we have somewhat in common, but you're far smarter than I am. But I was in a flight crew in the Navy, and when I got out, I went to work in an electronic apparatus place for coal mine equipment and in residential. And just did that for a year, and then I become an electrician and electronic technician in a large machine shop. And I see you worked on bending rolls. We had one that would bend up to 9 inches thick and a foot wide, or you could go out to 12 foot and up to 2 or 3 inches. I don't remember. And I can't remember, it had Selsons or Magnusons or something on it for the feedback. But it sounds very familiar. As to what you worked with there. And I worked with vacuum tubes on motor generator sets, thyrotrons, and the associated control tubes for many years. And tried to keep those decrepit machine tools going that were... Oh, we had one that would swing... the French mill, the Berthier would swing 37 foot in diameter, I think it was. Boy, I'm losing it. I'm getting older. I'm 72 now, Gary. Back to you. KF4GGK and 0TR.
Yeah, yeah. Those were some machines. I worked on this kind of stuff in my 20s. Outfit called MagoCut in Baltimore. They had a orbital cutoff machine that would take a 2-foot by 2-foot billet and cut off pieces. And the operator would end up breaking the cutting wheel many times because he couldn't see what was going on. And he couldn't tell for sure whether it was binding or not. So I designed an automatic system where he just skimmed the edges, the four edges, pushed the button, and it would sense the motor load, and on that basis would regulate the cutting. So, yeah, that was some cutting machine. They only had two or three of them. I don't know how many. And I did many other things, and steel mills and aluminum mills, designing controllers. That was kind of fun, but I only had 2 years of college. And the company I worked for didn't care about that. All they cared about is my design abilities. So after a while, I just said, hey, I have to find a way to get a degree. So I came down south and went to Clemson, and believe it or not, after 14 years of going to college off and on, I finally had a degree at the age of 32. How about that?
Fine business. Well, I'll tell you, Gary, it hurt me all my life not completing a degree, and I had some college, but I didn't finish it. I had a family, and our machine shop was 300,000 square feet. And I was the only electrician there that could read blueprints, so they wouldn't let me go during the day and work at night like they did the machinists. And so I had to get my education otherwise. I took some night school. I took four years of electronic engineering Mom? Homeschooling, anyways, and my memory's going away here fast lately. And I learned a lot from that, though, and it helped me in the industry. Well, we used up to 500-ton press brakes, and that mill, that Berthier, was 27 foot, not 37 foot in diameter, but that's still awfully big. They can machine 100,000-pound bearing, and it would finish at 80,000, so give you an idea of the size. We made water valves up to 144-inch diameter butterfly valves, and we made cone valves. And like you, they'd send me out to the field, which was enjoyable because I didn't have to go very often. They'd send me as an engineer, a field service engineer. I wasn't, and I claim no fame to being an engineer. I'm not smart enough. But I'd go out there and set the valves, and, oh, we made large dam gates, and I'd set that, and I'd work on coal mining equipment occasionally. But the biggest motors we normally had was 100 horsepower. It was 100,000-watt generating system on a, it was Amplodyne, and it was made in Sweden on that big mill. And it was 480 volts DC, and it had 100 horse in the pit, which was plenty big. It was a huge motor. But I've worked on 250 horse motors and hooked them up and stuff. Nothing compared to what you see down here at General Electric, though. They got some motors down there in that test cell that is just beyond your wildest dreams, Jerry. Over.
Talking about motors, I designed the electronic controller for a dual-span finishing mill for a steel company. It rolled steel at 100 miles an hour for hardening, just work hardening. And it used three motors where the shafts were put together. Each motor was 300 horsepower. General Electric was doing that setup. And my responsibility was the force control on the work rollers. Yeah, it had had cylinders 33 inches diameter and up to 3,000 PSI could go on it. What a setup. The sucker was three stories tall. The salesman that initially got me into this design sketched a little thing on a napkin during coffee break. And he said, can you control these cylinders? And I said, oh, yeah, no problem. I get there for a startup, and, man, I'm telling you, I was totally scared. This sucker was huge. And my little box was only about a foot wide and 6 inches high. It's incredible. But everything worked. It was good. Yeah, those were adventurous times. But like I said, they did nothing to help me get my degree. So I decided after a while to leave and came down south. And I haven't regretted it since.
AGK, this is N0TR. No, you have an impressive background there. I just really enjoyed reading that on there. It's extensive. Well, we used mostly TAC generators at first for feedback to keep the suicide circuits from running away, and then encoders, and later resolvers, and some of the CNC machine tools had permanent magnet motors on them there later in my career. I retired about 10 years ago from up in Kansas. The only time I worked on 300 horse motors, Gary, was we had a room full of air compressors at a wheel plant I worked at, and it was Superior Wheel. And I worked there 4 years, and then when the automobile industry went to heck, they closed it down and sent it to Mexico. But that room of 300 horsepower compressors was, wow. You better have ear protection when you went in there. They used a lot of air there, and they had machining centers. They made 55 to 80,000 wheels a month, Gary. Over.
That's amazing. Yeah, I had adventures in industry. I worked for a company called the Murado Valve Company. That's after I had a three-year stint at Allied Chemical Central Research. I loved chemistry. I thought that'd be the thing to do. But found out the only one that makes money in chemistry are PhDs. And all I had was a high school degree. I figured, even though they liked me, you know, they called me a good cook. I got out of chemistry and back into electronics. Things worked out. Listen, I enjoyed our chat, but I am getting a dry tongue. I have to leave the motorhome and get a cup of coffee to become civilized again. How about you?
Well, I just had a banana. And I'm drinking a cup of coffee out of this Foothills Amish furniture cup that got up there at Landrum. Jerry, the pleasure's all mine. Come back soon, and we'll talk to you down the line. And the other gentleman that was on here, I think, was Jerry, and I've just talked to him once, and he's really enjoyable to talk to also. Been a great pleasure, and we'll write you about some other memories. It might help our memory stay intact. The Kilo Fox 4, Golf Kilo, in 0TR 73, Gary.
Well, yeah, I'm 78, so I have projects that keep my mind going. Enjoyed talking with you. It's been fun. It's nice to meet somebody that has talents like yours. It's great. Have a good day. KF4 GGK.